Hello, I'm Matt with Schematical, and with me, as always, is Dominic DeMarco.
And happy today, Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Sorry, I've been gone for a couple weeks. I had some family matters to tend to.
Well, welcome this back. Week. You could you use some time off. You needed a break, so it was not ideal circumstances, but a little time away is a good thing here and there.
Yeah, and I will be around the holidays as well, towards the end of December. So I'll be off the grid there for a little bit as well. But today I'm here and we're going to talk about how I run my office hours in consulting. I've been getting a lot of press lately, been doing a lot more podcasts, stuff like that, getting more leads. And I realized that I had done a poor job on the website conveying how the process of working with us begins. And so I wanted to make sure I kind of set that expectation and communicated that clearly. And I figured, why not hit record on it while we're at it?
All right. So no tech talk today, but we'll talk about helping your tech today, really.
Yeah. And we do a little tech talk, but now, so typically we start off with an initial consultation. So 45 minutes to an hour, and we kind of get a feel for what your problems are. You can ask me any questions you want. During that time, I don't log in anything yet, but you can screen share and show me whatever your problems are, and I'll do my best to help you address that.
So are if we you talking guys, code, infrastructure,
Terraform,
a little bit of
whatever you
really
want. Yeah, you can show it. Yeah, I'm not logging into anything or getting, you know, access to your stuff. That's for step two, which is the infrastructure assessment part. And so from there, before I engage in typically a long-term prolonged engagement with a client, we do an initial assessment. I just did one recently, a little more security focused one, and found a lot of interesting things that the client hadn't had great insight into. And so at the end of that, which usually takes roughly 2 weeks, it could be a little longer, it could be a little shorter, depends on your infrastructure. But at that point, I leave you with a report that you can take.
Let's you know, back up a little bit really quickly, though. So you're going to get access to systems in generally a read-only mode, just so you can go in there and actually do some investigation, do some digging around. You're going to map what's connected to who, to how, because sometimes CEOs, CTOs might not even necessarily know everything that's going on within their infrastructure and how it's all interconnected. Because you've got consultants and cowboys out there doing different pieces of it.
Yeah, it's very common. Very common. Okay. And yes, absolutely. During the second step, step two, the infrastructure assessment, which lasts roughly 2 weeks, generally I get read-only access to AWS or at least specific parts of it. I don't want access to the secrets manager and a couple other things, but I want access to, you know, to view all your stats, your metrics, your handful of logs. I usually create a network diagram of sorts, which is my, you've kind of seen me do that one before where it's kind of like the Charlie Day meme with all the red strings behind them, you know? So I kind of map out everything and make sure, you know, I question all the assumptions, you know, how's this work? Where's this, you know, code coming from? Make sure I understand all the build pipelines, have that all documented. At that point I'm looking for any infrastructure that's not auto scaling, that's liable to get knocked over easily. If I'm doing, you know, more security stuff, I mean, I do this anyway, but the, you know, you check all the security groups, make sure none of them are exposed to the whole world.
And I think you often find over provisioned security groups.
I would say overexposed.
Having more. Okay. That's a better way to say it. Yeah. They have far more access than they should for a worker or a code pipeline or an intern even.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, the security audit part, a lot of times I go in there, you got IAM roles that have credentials. An example would be if you had like an API key that had admin access, you know, so, and you want to limit the fewest amount of AWS access tokens that are out there, access keys. And so you really don't want to have any of them that have admin access, because there's no reason an API call should have admin access. So things like that,
phantom ghost infrastructure that's running that maybe somebody spun up once upon a time and everybody's afraid to shut it off because they don't know what it's doing.
Lots of times I find that.
Lots of skeletons can be found in a relatively, say, short, quick engagement than just an assessment.
Yep, absolutely. And more recently, I've been doing more advising on AI strategy, AI and ML pipelines, you know, ops, and that. So that's kind of the fourth pillar that this is becoming right now. Of part of what we do is advising on.
Sorry, carry on.
Is advising on that and how to spin that up in a scalable fashion.
Something that, you know, shall remain nameless, but you found AI models that were theoretically supposed to be have reinforcement learning that were months and months since they'd last been reinforced.
Yeah, the pipelines weren't running in that particular scenario, but yeah. So then at the end, we package all that up and put out a report that lets people have all this in writing. So, you know, I could ramble at you all day, but it's good to have these kind of game plans in writing. From there, you could choose to go it alone, you know, have your team work this report. You can take that report and go hire someone else if you wanted to. All that's fine by me. Or if you like the direction we've been going, you could typically, the next step is to sign up for an office hours spot. So office hours is a reoccurring, you know, weekly, biweekly, depending on your needs, could be twice a week as well.
This is the long-term engagement. So the first two were pretty light duty, pretty quick, but this is going to be minimum a quarter, more likely a half a year, year or beyond that of, you know, your continuous oversight and additionally coaching within there. Because the first two steps, really, there's not a whole lot of coaching in there. It's more of, like you said, it's just an overview. It's an analysis. The third step is, okay, you want your people to fix this, but you want somebody who is really an expert. And that's where you sit in the, I won't say the driver's chair, but the coach's seat in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Coach's seat's a good way to put it. But think of it like in college, you know, you go to a professor's office hours when you need help. Your team can come to me with any problem that they've got. I recommend you prioritize the highest priority. You know, if you got your intern saying, I can't turn on my laptop, that's probably not a $1 million problem, but I have seen them come in and try and prioritize that. I said, don't give me the big problems. Tell me what's costing you $1 million a year. And I work with your team to, you know, advise and oversee and execute on these plans while training up your team. Additionally, some people don't have their own in-house teams. I also can help consult and be a impartial, unbiased third party, helping you hire the right people to do the hands work and make sure that gets executed. I do a lot of assessing of third party or, you know, your service providers. And even, I mean, I'd also advise on hiring and things of that nature right now, because I'm doing a series right now on trying a series of blog posts about some tips for hiring right now, because it is a bit crazy. I think hiring in the tech sector in 2026 is going to be wild.
AI versus AI versus, you know, you've got AI reading resumes, you've got AI screening people, and then you have people using AI on the interviews. And then we've even heard of a couple of times where somebody was hired and the person that showed up, or they don't believe was the person that was actually in the interview and got hired.
Yeah. So that's a lot of weird stuff going on right now. I mean, it's part of the reason we created Cloud War Games, shameless plug, is to help assess potential candidates. You know, if they can solve the problems we're throwing at them using AI, you know, it's not the worst thing they're using AI, but if they can't actually do something, and this is a real life simulation, I've actually knocked over hardware. And if they can't actually figure out a way to bring it back online, then they're probably not a good candidate for the position. And so
I was your guinea pig in one of those where we were doing a cloud war game. And, you know, I've got the basics of AWS. I'd never tell anybody I know what I'm doing, but I attempted to fix the things with AI. You know, this is the problem. Help me fix it. And AI was woefully inadequate in those real world situations to figure out what was going on. If it had a full network diagram and more training and other things, sure. But just going to ChatGPT and saying, my AWS is down, what should I do? It was of zero use whatsoever.
Yeah, it's interesting because it struggles with the extended content. Like the it's good at linear thinking in some ways, but these networks are living, breathing, three-dimensional, mm-hmm. four-dimensional organisms, and it has trouble really grasping all that and keeping that kind of in its focus. It kind of jumps around. So I'm sure they'll build an LLM that can do more of it eventually. But as of today, feeling pretty good about my job.
Well, that I remember some of the scenarios that you've created for Cloud War Games, there's very obscure things that go wrong, and you have to go four layers deep into some service to find what is not right, be it a, you know, an incorrect DNS pointer, an incorrect environment variable, a misconfiguration of user credentials even.
Yeah. I'm going around in circles here, but yes, absolutely. And also, I mean, during office hours, I will continue to log into your system in a read-only capacity to move things. I generally don't make infrastructure changes unless it's an emergency, because I want your full-time staff to have complete insight into everything I do. So that way, you know, when I'm unavailable with other clients or whatever, then you've got someone on staff that's made the change and they understand it. And it prevents the lone wolf programmer synopsis, which if you go to schematical.com/comics, you'll see my lone wolf programmer series on there, and where they code themselves into a corner. At this point, there's always two people that understand the infrastructure change. I'm the one sitting there over the shoulder, making sure I understand what they're doing, and two, the person that on your team that's making the changes. So
Ben say this really well in the video before, saying this is the worst job security in the world, and he loves that you do it because you train everybody else how to do it, but there's always something else to be done in a growing, scaling business. So, you know, you could be that lone wolf. You could be the guy saying, I'm going to set things up, and your people can then just write the code on it. But to your point, they've never learned how to ride the bike themselves, and as soon as the training wheels come off, they're going to fall over.
That's exactly right. And that's a big impetus for why I set up the office hours the way I do. So let's talk deliverables. So it does include advisory, oversight, reports, training, coaching, documentation. You can record the calls if you want to, all that. But what I generally don't do to prevent exactly this is coding, doing the infrastructure updates myself. And because I'm too old for this, I don't have any SLA on call stuff. I mean, my clients have my phone number and they've never abused it. But occasionally I will get the call outside of things. So basically I say unlimited access to me subject to mutual availability. So yes, we've got a dedicated 2-hour block for us to do office hours. Outside of that, I still do my best to answer questions. I was on a thread yesterday monitoring a situation, you know, and it was well outside of our office hours, but it's subject to mutual availability. So if I'm with another client or if I'm doing this podcast or something like that, I generally don't drop everything for small things. If it is something emergency, we'd hurry this podcast up. But generally, again, you work with me, my system designs don't allow for a lot of emergencies. I don't like getting woken up at 3 a.m. That was a younger man's game. So,
and even when something that severe happens, you will make yourself available as much as reasonably possible, but half the internet went down and took their stuff with it. So you're not going to be able to help them a whole lot anyways, except perhaps come up with the contingency plan to stand things back up once, some AWS data center stops its meltdown or Cloudflare meltdown stops happening or whatever other major interruption occurs.
Yeah. And I mean, again, some of my clients, they're, you know, big and they can afford to do multi-region, multi-cloud and all that stuff. Other clients, it's like, if we go down, we're losing $1,000 an hour, not $100,000. So we don't want to flip the bill for a cost that's going to be, you know, it only goes down an hour every year. So we're not going to pay $100,000 to go multi-region, multi-cloud, because we only lose $1,000 a year due to outages, you know. So you've got to figure it out.
And you can do that math as well. Yeah. So you can consult with them saying, okay, here's where it's going to make sense when you reach a certain level. Someone recently that we were talking with, or maybe on one of your videos, said you calculated what the cost was going to be after some transition. It was with like within percentage points of the actual estimate.
Yeah, I think that was Zach's testimonial. But yeah, no, I'm very meticulous. I am a business owner, and I think of my clients' businesses as businesses. A lot of engineers come in there and it's like, it's a job, you know, what I expect, like, it, this is cool tech. I'm excited about it. So I'm going to work on it. You know, they're not thinking about the investment of hours as an investment. And that's a big thing, or the infrastructure,
or the maintenance,
or the maintenance. Yep. And so calculating ROI, all those things are within the purview of our services right there. If, you know, every decision you make as, you know, as an owner of a business or a C-suite, you know, person, means that that's an investment of time. Your engineer is going to do this investment of money. It's going to have ramifications down the line. So all of that financial kind of calculating the ROI of your tech investment is within the purview of the scope of my office hours. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 100%. Because I like to think of your business as, I say this, I keep your bottom line top of mind.
Bravo.
I'm not sure if I put that on the website. You put that on the website
somewhere. No, you should. That's got a nice, it rolls off the tongue very nicely.
Okay. Yeah. But that's extremely important that you're thinking of the business, that your engineers take, you know, people designing the technology that you're going to run, think of the business as a business and not just cool tech. So, So that's it. And there is one other option. I call the plutonium option, the platinum option, the nuclear option, whatever. And I do occasionally do hands work. That means where someone brings me in, this project needs to be done. It needs to be done fast. It needs to be done quick. I always recommend you pair me with your developers. But I allot for time for additional engagements where I actually do the coding myself, and make sure I am delivering code. I am delivering infrastructure changes. Typically, I don't recommend that long-term. I mean, there could be a scenario long-term, but I try and train up your team, and it's much more cost-effective for them to maintain. So I come in, build something big, train your team on it, pass it off to them, and I go back to doing my podcast and all that stuff there.
And this is often going to be a big core piece of infrastructure that then the developers will continue to hang other tools on and continue to develop. It is the core of something critical to your system that you're going to put together. And then they're going to continue to do all of the supplementary code that connects to, communicates with, interacts with whatever that big piece of core infrastructure is.
Yeah. An example would be a hodgepodge of, you know, EC2 instances that ran a bunch of different infrastructure, and you wanted to get it migrated into ECS. You wanted it all standardized. You wanted it all in Terraform. So you had infrastructure as code for every infrastructure change is committed, you know, so it's big migrations like that. Not uncommon.
Or there are some AI. Continue.
But there are some AI related projects. We've been playing with vector DBs and, been doing some real exciting stuff with Bedrock Converse to spin up agentic AI. So some of those, are things you might want to, if you had a big new feature like that, you wanted to get in there, training a recommendation engine, you know, things like that.
Or if you've got multiple sites that you've aggregated together and you want to do one really intelligent, unified search across all sorts of different properties
big
and
search.
Places.
Yep, creating data lakes, things of that nature, you know, you might want to bring me in on. I do have recommendations. You know, and there's always schematical.com/free where I've got a ton of the free resources so you can see how I've done some of this stuff in the past. And, you know, I've got one on the data lakes. I think I did fairly recently, if I haven't done a video on it maybe, but I digress. So there's always the nuclear option as well, but it's just not, it's not the most scalable thing for me time wise, you know, since I'm trying to service a bunch of clients at once. So I do reserve time for it, but it's something we kind of keep in the back, you know, in our pockets, but it's an option.
So before we sign off on this one, why don't you give us just again, step one, step two, step three, give me the YouTube short of how Schematical works.
Sounds good. So step one, you come to the website, you're interested, you've got a problem that we can solve, you sign up for the initial consultation, 45 minutes. You know, we chat, I give you, you know, whatever advice you show me, you know, you can screen share with me. I'm not logging into your software there, but you can show me your code, show me whatever you want. If your needs go beyond that, then we go ahead and do an initial assessment. Okay. It takes roughly 2 weeks to give or take, in which case I do log in, get read-only access to your system, most likely access to the code base and a bunch of other things. I will then do cost assessments, security assessments, scalability, and more lately I'm doing a lot of AI ML ops type stuff to help advise there. And finally, step three, I generate a report from step two there that gives me a whole game plan of things you can do. Do whatever you want with that. Step three, office hours. So that's an ongoing engagement where either weekly, biweekly, every other week, twice a week, depending on your needs, you get a 2-hour block where your team can come to me and ask me questions. I still have read-only access. Generally, I coach them and teach them how to make changes on your system. And that's pretty much it.
Bravo. Anything else you want to tell everybody out there listening today? But yeah, the schematical process, 3 steps. Anybody that has questions about this, Matt, you've got a testimonials page where you have people that rave about this. So
yeah, there's testimonials on the consulting page. So schematical.com/consulting. I think I've got some on the homepage there, but you can, you know, if you're interested in any of this information here, schematical.com/consulting has a bunch of extra resources there that'll let you know. Schematical.com, the homepage also has some of the stuff. Go ahead.
And like Ben has said, and this is the second time I'm mentioning this in this video, because I think it is important that you have the worst business model in the world. You teach everybody else how to do what you do, but there's so much value in that. Businesses continue to grow and encounter new problems that all you're doing is continuing to lift up the team. You're continuing to coach the client's team to a point where they could be almost as good as you. I don't know.
I mean, in some ways, some of them are better than me in different things. I mean, I try to elevate them up so they can focus on your business specific needs and not how to keep a server online, you know? Mm-hmm. So I want them to be focusing on how to keep you 10 steps ahead of your competitors. And I'll take care of, you know, just basic security and all that stuff and teach, you know, whatever on your team to do it as well. But the technology is moving so fast, especially with the AI stuff right now. It's really exciting. So I get to learn something, you know, super nerdy, and then train all these guys on it so they can take that knowledge and then use it and adapt it to your specific use case and your business needs to keep you ahead of all the people chasing you, your competitors and whatnot. So I'd say it's in some ways
it also keeps a bad business model. Well, it also keeps their developers from playing with every new thing, because you can come in and say, here's the things that are coming out and where they're particularly applicable, so that the implementation time is spent on implementing instead of experimenting.
Exactly. Now, we just recently, we had a client come to me and they're like, we're going to train a model from scratch, like brand new. And I'm like, hold on a second. There's 6 tools that can do this better, faster, cheaper, and won't take 6 months to train. And sure enough, that product is evolving very quickly into a beautiful feature set that'll be run on a fraction of the cost and out in a fraction of the time. And so it's cool to be able to actually help people choose the right technology, the right tools, and guide them. Because that would have, if we trained that thing from scratch, it would have been insanely expensive, mm-hmm. to run and everything. We had a prototype up and running. I think it took me probably 3 hours to get a prototype up and running, in which I passed off to their team and then over the shoulder coded with them for another 2 hours, and we had something running. And so it's saved them a ton of time. I mean, honestly, that was
you wouldn't even have had the data pipeline set up in 4 hours if you were building it from scratch.
It was a ludicrous notion. And it's not always that simple. But sometimes it is. And if I can help my mm-hmm. clients save 6 months worth of man hours and get it done in an afternoon, great.
Bang. Why win not? For everybody. So
yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, I bring it home, Matt. Bring it home.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. You know where to find me if you want to work with us. Also, we've got the community, schematical.com. That's our slash community. It's our group coaching community. So if by chance you don't have time for a one-on-one, I basically do office hours, but with a group setting. So there's other options there. So that's all I got. With that said, I'm Matt with Schematical. Dominic, thank you for joining.
Always a pleasure. Ciao.